In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
Do you wake up in the morning wondering what's going to go wrong next? Does it feel like every day the world spins further and further off its axis? Do you feel powerless in the face of forces beyond your control that are ravaging the environment, destroying democracy, and making your existence into a never-ending slog through a wasteland of bad news? If this is you, congrats! You're what passes for a perfectly normal human being with a Twitter account today. But is all of that really so horrible? Is this a bad time to be alive? Have we just lost the filter that once gave us enough perspective to keep our heads on straight and not be miserable? Maybe. Today we're going to take a step back and look at some scientific evidence that says no, everything does not in fact suck. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story.
Our ancestors would be stunned at the cocoon, the safe, stable, quiet lives that we lead. And I think they would be flabbergasted that we find it any risk in the things that we do. And yet here we are. You know, our newspapers are filled with studies about how coffee's going to kill you and how your cell phone's giving you cancer.
Scott Gilmore is an editor-at-large and columnist for Maclean's, and he's been their lead writer on the Trump administration, so he knows a little something about bad news. Scott, you're off where now?
My family place is northern Manitoba.
Are you way out of the city?
Oh, yeah. Look, if I walk up my back door and head north, the next road I hit is in Russia.
Is it really easy to forget how bad things are when you're out there?
You know, actually, one of those life pro tips that I should probably put up on Reddit, I muted every single Canadian in my Twitter feed about 6 months ago. And honest to God, like I was actually just thinking about this morning, my stress levels have gone down dramatically. My agitation, when you stop listening to the Canadian poly, you know, chasing its tail about, you know, the strangest things, you stop caring about those things and you start reading, you know, the Globe and Mail again. And you have time to digest the news and put things in context, and I strongly recommend it.
Well, that's why I wanted to talk to you, because something about your piece kind of hit home. I've been thinking about this a lot. Why do I wake up feeling like everything sucks?
Why do you wake up every morning thinking everything sucks?
Yeah.
Well, I think there's a couple answers to that. The first is that humans are hardwired to worry. I mean, that's how you survive millions of years of evolution. Is you're constantly worried about the lion around the next clump of trees. And so it's natural to have things to worry about. And then the second part of the answer is that in the modern era, we are constantly bombarded with external stimuli, with noise, basically. And so we're constantly trying to filter through that noise to try to find a signal. And so you wake up in the morning and you check your Twitter feed or your email inbox. Or even, you know, a modern newspaper has 100 different things to worry about in the first 20 pages. And so as a result of us, literally bathing in all of this risk signal or threat signal or threat noise, we're overwhelmed by it. We can't process it all. And so as a result, we make some very inaccurate assumptions on the state of things. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, kids aren't allowed to walk to school anymore, even though it's never been safer in human history for a child to go, you know, to walk 200 yards from one point to another. But because we're so steeped in all of this different information about possible threats, regardless of how large they are, we've lost the ability to actually gauge the size of those threats and whether or not we should take them seriously.
So even though you've kind of thought it through like this, do you still wake up in the morning feeling like that when you check your Twitter feed?
Yeah, I can't help it. You know, I've tried for a variety of reasons to tune out Canadian news, but either I can't or I won't tune out the American news. And so the daily sturm und drang of the Trump administration is so distracting that you can't help but have it, you know, lodge in your psyche, even if you, you know, you step back and try to put it in context.
Why did you mute Canadian news? It seems like that would be less disturbing than American.
Well, I muted Canadian news paradoxically because I care. Canadian politics matters to me. Canadian issues matter to me. I have an emotional connection to them, whether it's because I, you know, of the region that's being discussed or the policy that's being debated. And so in Twitter, when there's this constant barrage of back and forth on these different issues, I found myself getting more and more emotionally distracted or, you know, provoked. Now, when it comes to most world news and with American news, I don't have a horse in that race, so to speak. And so I'm not as emotionally committed to it. And so when Donald Trump says something that's absolutely outrageous, you know, I splutter for a minute, but it doesn't, you know, doesn't grip me by the throat, so to speak. It's dramatically improved my quality of life, by the way.
Where does social media sit in all of this? You mentioned we check Twitter first thing in the morning. But, you know, I remember reading the newspaper and being anxious as a younger person. Has it made it that much worse? What's the accelerant factor?
Yeah, it really has. You know, humans, we're simply not wired to thrive in this environment that we've created for ourselves. We really are still creatures of the Serengeti, which means that, you know, in the course of your lifetime, you know, young Jordan growing up in the Serengeti as a nomadic tribesman, you would have seen two or three people get killed by lions in the course of your lifetime. And as a result, you would lodge that in your brain as lions are something to be leery of. Now, Jordan, now in the 21st century, has probably seen hundreds of videos of lions attacking different things, whether it's on Animal Planet or, you know, movies or read about it in books.
I love those videos, by the way.
Well, there you go. Well, those videos now have, you know, they go into your brain, and your brain goes, holy cow, lions, this is an issue. We need to be aware of this. Sharks is probably a better example. People are terrified of sharks, even though, you know, snails kill more people than sharks every year.
Wait, I got to take it off. So how do snails kill more people than sharks every year?
Snails, they carry a particular type of disease, a parasitic disease that you can get, particularly in the tropics.
So, I had to ask that because, yeah, there was no way I was letting that go. But we just finished Shark Week. Even the president is scared of sharks.
Yeah, yeah, and we're scared of the president because every week is Trump Week for us, isn't it?
So this is what I wanted to talk to you about because, you know, there are all these reasons, and certainly it's not like you can just ignore Trump and all the damage he causes will go away. But like you mentioned about kids walking around outside, how safe are we now? How much better do we have it than we did when young Jordan was growing up?
Well, one-fifth of the planet right now, one-fifth of the population, over 1 billion people, 1.3, I suppose, are alive today who wouldn't have been even 60 years ago because of the extension how modern medicine has extended life spans and reduced infant mortality. So there's a billion people walking around the planet right now who wouldn't be alive. And that's an, you know, a very good indicator of how safe we are. The number of instances of children being abducted by strangers in North America in the last year can be counted on one hand. But that stranger danger instinct is now so ingrained in our culture that far fewer children now are walking to school or riding their bikes to school than at any other point in our modern history. And so it's an ironic paradox.
How do we find the balance? Because we should probably stay engaged in world events. It's a pretty critical time. But in order to not let it kind of get the upper hand on you, how do you balance those two?
You know, I think the advice I would give to our listeners is you got to read the whole article or you got to look at the numbers. So, for example, it is true that the number of wars, interstate wars right now, is at a higher point than any point in the last 100 years. But the size of those wars are actually quite small. The fatalities and the casualties from those wars are quite small. And so in the broader context, this is one of the most, if not the most peaceful period in human history right now. In the same with, you know, there has been an uptick in recent years with terrorist attacks. But again, if you read through the whole article or if you look for the original data, you'll see that the vast majority of those terrorist attacks are taking place in Syria and Afghanistan and other places. And that, again, if you stand back and look at it in the context of the last 100 years, it's a relatively low point. And so we need to get past our emotions and our instincts and take a look at the hard data.
Well, I want to run something by you because this is one of the things that I looked into when I knew I was going to talk to you that kind of fascinated me. It's a study that's been written up in Science about blue dots. And in this study, they showed a whole bunch of participants, hundreds of dots in various shades of blue, from deep purple to deep blue to light blue. And they asked people to say which of these dots are blue. And the bluer a dot, the more likely people were to say that dot is blue. And then what they did was they started reducing how blue the dots were. So they would be more purple or more light blue or more turquoise. And they found that people's definition of blue changed. They started to classify the purplish dots as blue now because they were still told that there were blue dots out there. So they went to find them.
Right.
And what they found when they expanded the study is if you did the same thing with faces and you asked people to classify faces as threatening or non-threatening, and then you reduce the number of truly threatening faces, they start classifying neutral faces as the ones that are threatening.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. That's an absolutely fascinating study. But, you know, like I said earlier, we are programmed to try and find patterns and to find risk. And so if we're told that there's blue dots out there, we're going to find blue dots out there. It's just, it's, you know, if you're told that a cloud looks a particular way, you're going to see it that way. Our brains are very, very good, better than most mammalian brains in terms of finding patterns that way in images. And then in terms of, you know, finding threatening faces, yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. Our ancestors would be stunned at the cocoon, the safe, stable, quiet lives that we lead. And I think they would be flabbergasted that we find it any risk in the things that we do. And yet here we are. You know, our newspapers are filled with studies about how coffee's going to kill you and how your cell phone's giving you cancer.
And they're full of Donald Trump. And I wanted to ask you, because your job, part of your job, at least for McLean's, is to keep track of the latest news from his administration. You're paid to do it, but everybody seems to be doing it anyway. Should we just be tuning out the United States because, like you said, we don't have a horse in this race? Or what responsibility does kind of the average Canadian have to make sure they're connected to what's going on in America and the world at large now?
Well, I think we have a huge responsibility, particularly in the 21st century and interconnected world, to be paying attention to what's going on outside this country, just as much as it regards to the United States as it does to the Central African Republic right now, or what's happening in East Timor or even in Russia. That being said, the way we pay attention matters. Sitting on Twitter and Facebook and taking information from second and third hand sources and looking at viral posts and talking to people who talk to people who read a study is not the way we should be doing it. We should be paying attention to what's happening in the United States, but we should do it by trying to find the most reliable sources possible and preferably the sources that provide the most context. You know, unfortunately, it's the long reads. It's the long pieces of journalism. You know, one of the first pieces of advice I was given when I was leaving high school was to do the reading. You know, simple three words, do the reading. And at that time, it applied to going to being an undergrad and making sure that you showed up in class prepared. But ever since then, in all my other different jobs and roles and responsibilities, I have recognized that the people who do the reading are the ones that manage the best and who manage to thrive and become leaders and to understand the situation. And so it's the same for our listeners. You got to do the reading.
Well, we wanted to have folks like you on the podcast because you kind of bring that depth. What I want to know is, are there any shortcuts? You know, because there's nobody here who's going to dig into stuff the way that you have, because again, it's your job. Are there any ways that they can educate themselves without getting lost in the Twitter fire hose of bad news?
It seems difficult because we have now managed to maneuver ourselves into a modern information society where everything is being, you know, spoon-fed to us in you know, little micro tablets. But it's not that difficult. Just turn off Twitter, you know, get off Facebook, pick up a newspaper, watch the evening news. You know, subscribe to your local paper. These are all very simple things to do. And, you know, and I would even go so far as to say to Canadians, you know, another thing you can do that nobody does is pick up the phone and call your member of parliament and ask them what they're doing about something or why they're not doing something about something. You'll find that your level of engagement goes up dramatically, your level of understanding goes up, and more importantly, your level of anxiety will go down.
That's interesting because I remember having a conversation with a fellow journalist a little while ago. He was asking me to think about how many times you direct your browser to a unique news source now. So you type in, you know, newyorktimes.com or mcleans.ca, as opposed to just taking what's coming at you on social media. And there's no intention anymore to seek out sources.
That's a great observation. Yeah, absolutely. And being aware of that behavior is, you know, 90% of the way to changing it. So if you recognize that the next time you sit down with your smartphone or your laptop, that you're being directed, that you're being fed, as opposed to you going out and eating, then you'll change it.
That's a good note to end on. Thanks, Scott.
My pleasure, Jordan.
That was The Big Story. I hope you feel a little bit better gliding into the long weekend, realizing that the world is not, in fact, on fire. It's just your brain. If you want more from us, you can find us at thebigstorypodcast.ca, on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at Big Story Podcast. And of course, wherever you get your podcasts, you can subscribe for free. And please hit that rate button, review us, tell your friends, let us know what you want us to talk about. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We're taking 3 days off. We'll talk Tuesday.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.